This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by AppPro International Incorporated, a leading developer of innovative supercomputing solutions uniquely positioned to support high-performance computing markets. www.appro.com.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
The number one surprise of the week.
And there's more than one Mike on this show. Hello and welcome to a special edition of HPC Wire Soundbite, live from ISC 2011. It's June 20th, 2011. I'm Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research, joined by my regular co-anchor, Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire. Michael, welcome to Hamburg.
Hey, it's great to be here as usual. It's a great show, great town.
I love ISC every year. I'll tell you what, it's only Monday, and the show just opened, and I feel like we've been kind of already doing the show for 2 days.
Yeah.
I was here doing meetings on Saturday. We had the Sunday workshops, and there were a ton of news today.
Yeah, it started off with a big bang. We're going to talk about that in a second. But yeah, I mean, that actually a big day. I wasn't here yesterday, but you were here for the workshops and some of the other stuff they were doing. Yeah, they've crammed a lot into these first 2 days.
Yeah, a lot in the first 2 days, a lot of announcements that went today, including a couple of big ones. We had a press lunch today to talk about some of the big news. But I think the one that most people are talking about right now is the what we'll call the number one surprise of the week, Michael.
Right. It's a new number one system on the top of the top 500. It's the K computer in Japan at Riken. An 8-plus petaflop system on Linpack, which is, just blows away everybody else on the list. We thought that Chinese system was going to last for at least a year with 2.6, and all of a sudden we've got something three times as big.
I'm amazed. I mean, Tianhe 1A, I was getting ready for a panel discussion that I'm going to host, and I almost had written in how long is Tianhe 1A going to be the top of the list.
Right.
And the question was moot before I ever got there.
Yeah, short-lived. I mean, that's the way it is. Sometimes fame doesn't last long in this top 500 business, and it sure didn't. And it was a surprise to everybody. We knew they were working, installing the system. They've been installing it since 2010. But the final date was 2012, which they're going to finish it up. This is not the final system. They're going to go up to 10 peak petaflops.
Right. We knew this was out there, but right. I was kind of picture. I wasn't even thinking of it necessarily in the supercomputing time frame this
right,
year.
Right, in November, right. We were thinking it's going to be further out. But
I was thinking 2012, and then all of a sudden, here it is. I mean, 8 petaflops, right? We heard that right. It's 8 petaflops?
8 petaflops, yeah. It was sort of, it's a double take there, but sure enough, it's big, I think, as much performance as the, I think, the next 2 through 10 systems.
Well, and we'll get to the rest of the top 10 in a second, but correct me if I'm wrong, Michael. I'm trying to remember back. It was supercomputing 2009 or around that time frame, only a year and a half ago. Weren't we on this podcast reporting that all the Japanese vendors were starting to drop out of the Riken project?
Right. There was the three big system vendors. So it was Fujitsu, it was NEC, and then it was Hitachi. And in 2009, NEC and Hitachi dropped out. They abandoned the contract.
NEC went, Hitachi went, and then Fujitsu was kind of thinking about it, and then they couldn't do it, and they kind of dropped out. And a few weeks later, or a month later, they came back in and said they could carry the ball over the goal line.
And they did, yeah.
And it's been, and that was, you know, early 2010, so it's a year and a half, not even a year and a half later, and it's 8 petaflops.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think originally, before that happened, the original plan was to get that system out in 2011, so this delayed a little bit. In fact, the Japanese government at one point wanted to pull the funding off of that project, and they later reinstated it. So it's had its share of controversy, but yeah.
Well, not only controversy and not only a short time frame, but wasn't there something about an earthquake?
Yeah, there was an earthquake in there. And I guess, right, Riken had to stop. They had to stop deployment of the system for a certain amount of time. But obviously they picked it up again, and they got at least the eight petaflops in. They've got two more to go, but they worked through it, and it's been an amazing feat to get it.
I was sitting next to some of the Fujitsu representatives at lunch today. One of the questions that did come up was the power. I mean, this is a 10-megawatt system, and you know, we've heard about power shortages in Japan in the wake of the nuclear problems from the tsunami, but you know, this was always planned on being an independent grid. They've got their own power, and it's not like they could divert that power to the rest of the country. The power is dedicated to the computer.
Right, right. At 10 megawatts, that's a huge system. I mean, I think it's the biggest power draw of any system ever developed. But actually, it sounds like a lot, but for 8 Limpac petaflops, that's very good. In fact, it's on par with these GPU systems as far as energy efficiency and even some of the BlueJeans technology, though not the newest one. But it's
right.
A very energy efficient system.
Now let's catch us up here on this architecture, because we've been briefed on it before, but we weren't quite ready for it. We got Spark chips in here and a custom interconnect, right?
Right. You got the latest Spark 64, the 8FX chips, which are these 8-core chips, and they deal out like 128 gigaflops in 58 watts. So there's the power efficiency right there. It's 58
right.
watts for basically half of a Power 7 chip.
Right.
And then they got the Tofu interconnect, which is their proprietary interconnect to hook it all together. And it's a very efficient system. In fact, it's not only efficient power, it's efficient Limpac. I think the peak on this thing is just like 8.5 or 8.7, so it's like 93% efficient just on Limpac.
And the Tofu interconnect, also a healthy source of protein.
Yes, and it's good for you. So it's good for everybody here. This is a very tight system. Now, you and I were talking about the K before, and it's thinking, okay, this is going to be like one system. We're never going to see another one of these again. And we were just in the Fujitsu booth, we were just talking to them, and they're talking about, no, we're going to commercialize this system, we're going to sell it in Japan, and we're going to try and sell it in Europe, too.
Which was kind of an echo surprise that came in after this, but it kind of reminded me of the BlueJeans. When that was coming out, that was initially going to be a one-off, maybe it's a two-off, maybe it's a four-off, and then we turned around twice, and it was a commercial product, right?
Right, right. Now,
is that what's going to happen here with the K?
You know, I think we have to wait and see. I mean, this is a very proprietary system. It doesn't have the American market. They're not going to go after that, so they've got to go after the smaller Japanese and slightly smaller European market, but they said they have some prospects, and they're talking to people, and there's some big petaflop systems out there that people want, and it is very energy efficient, and if people aren't looking to accelerator technology, this could be a very interesting product.
So big kudos to Fujitsu, and we'll come back to accelerators in a second, but let's round out the top 10 a little bit here. There were a few other changes, weren't there? Or did everything else just move down one?
Basically everything moved down one. I think there was a couple systems that got upgraded, so the SGI system, one of the SGI systems got upgraded, and one of the others got upgraded, but basically it just pushed everybody down. And there's just a minor reshuffling on those top 10. But the important thing now is that all top 10 systems are petaflop systems. So top to bottom, they're all petaflop. They're all in petascale range.
The top 10 is all petaflop systems. That's the cutoff for getting into the top 10. And you were making an interesting point that the original petaflop system, the Roadrunner.
Right. That original system that broke the petaflop barrier in 2006 is now at the bottom of that top 10 list. So, and presumably, next time around, it's going to get kicked off that top 10 list.
Yeah.
So
Roadrunner right now is the benchmark for the bottom of the top 10.
Right. And I think we all remember in 2006, it was, you know, which wasn't that long ago. It was the thing to be. It was cutting edge technology. That's another accelerator system, in this case, the cell technology there. But, so all petaflop systems now, it's... We're definitely in the petascale era.
Welcome to petascale. Well, let's take a quick break for a sponsor and then come back and talk about accelerators a little bit, which is one of the things that's powering us there.
APRO is a leading developer of innovative supercomputing solutions uniquely positioned to support high-performance computing markets, focusing on medium to large-scale deployments where lower total cost of ownership is essential. APRO accelerates technical applications and business results through outstanding price per performance, fast time to market solutions based on the latest open standards technologies, innovative cluster tools, and management software packaged with HPC professional services and support. APRO supercomputing solutions enable scientists and engineers in academia, government, and industry to use highly technical, compute-intensive applications for scientific research discovery, data modeling, engineering simulations, and seismic visualization. APRO's headquarters is located in Milpitas, California, with offices in Korea and Houston, Texas.
Michael, we've been talking about petascale. We've been talking a lot about accelerators. And as much as there's a lot of GPUs going around, another big announcement in this space coming from Intel today.
Right. They sort of did this relaunch of the Mike architecture again. They originally announced it last year when they were sort of doing this Larrabee to many integrated core transition. They were rebranding it and repositioning it for the HPC market, and they did that at ISC a year ago, basically. And now they're sort of updating us on the progress. They've got a lot more users out there kicking the tires on it. They've upgraded the software tools. They talked a lot about software. And they did a little news about what the future, the real product's going to be, because we're still in the prototype stage. But it's not really a launch. It's just they're sort of giving us an update. But they look very committed to it. They seem to have generated a lot of interest from some of these users and from some of the vendors as well. We had SGI up there giving them kudos. And there's a number of vendors here that are showing the Mike architecture in its prototype form in their booth, just showing that they're committed to this architecture even before there's a product.
Right. Well, we've taken the covers off a little bit more and made it easier for people to talk about it. Yeah, you called it a relaunch or reaffirmation. I think that's a good way to look at it. We've had the software development platform, the Knights Ferry platform, out there for a little while, and now they're talking about actual applications that they're demoing, prototyping on the Intel Mike architecture, right?
Right, they have three or four applications they were demoing here from different science areas, mostly in Europe. But basically, they're talking about that from the point of view of how easy it is to do. So some of these things were ported in a matter of hours,
right?
And then they optimized it for the architecture in a matter of days. So what Intel is really stressing here is their software stack, their software tool chain is basically the same.
It's going to be all Intel tools for this compiler. It's not CUDA, it's not OpenCL, it's Intel compilers, Intel tools.
So it's C and Fortran compilers, and they're sort of leaning towards the OpenMP style of programming, but they also have other tools. They have Silk++, they've got threading building blocks they're supporting. They're supporting the Mike architecture across their whole tool set.
Right.
But basically it's OpenMP that they've started these applications on. But yeah, their big pitch is that if you're programming in Xeon today, you can use the same tools and the same programming paradigms and program a Mike. So that's going to attract a lot of people, I think, if it works out that way.
And additionally, I asked Intel if someone had already been programming in CUDA, whether that experience is helpful at all with Mike. And although you're, of course, not moving your CUDA code over, the answer basically was that if you've already identified some of those hot spots in your code that you can parallelize, that is useful experience for getting something to run well on Mike.
Right. Although I don't think Intel is actually looking to get those. I think they're looking to develop this market on their own, from their own customers, from the ground up. And they talk like CUDA as a proprietary solution that's just going to fade away when everybody buys a Mike. And
well, I mean, this is part of the battle between these architectures that we've been predicting. I think very notably, it's worth looking at whether Intel Mike is going to signal a slight architectural shift in terms of what an accelerator looks like. And, we might see a wide-scale adoption of accelerators, but 5 years from now, that's not necessarily a standalone chip of some PCI variant of interconnect. We could be moving a lot closer to a coprocessor model. It could be that the long-term war is more x86 versus ARM.
Right. I mean, NVIDIA and certainly AMD already have this plan to do. I mean, AMD's already implemented these integrated heterogeneous chips. Intel has not talked about it that way, although today Kurt Skoggin did intimate that just by talking about mixing fat cores and thin cores on the same piece of silicon. So I'm assuming, and I think everybody's assuming, that eventually we're going to see chips out of Intel that mix Xeons and Mikes together.
Absolutely.
That's not anything official, but I don't see any other way that they could move that product forward, considering what everybody else in the industry is doing.
I think that's an astute observation, Michael. I mean, we deal with heterogeneous computing in a lot of ways, and this is a new type of hybrid architecture that I think people are going to have in their workflows, especially because a lot of the accelerator adoption we've seen so far is still on small numbers of accelerators. And people trying to figure out which of their codes will work well and which won't. So they'll have some hybrid types of implementations where, part of the system is accelerated and part of it's not accelerated, and you've got to manage that kind of hybrid architecture.
Right. I mean, we should be clear. The very first product out of Intel is going to be on a PCI bus. It's going to be an external accelerator.
Yes, yes.
Which they're calling a coprocessor. They're trying to sort of even differentiate the term from accelerator. But it's going to be an external processor that you're going to have to program just like you do an external GPU today. I think the way they're going to differentiate that, again, is software tools. And also they did talk about performance, although they don't have the final version yet. They've only basically got a single precision accelerator now to show everybody. They did sort of drop the news this week that, you know, it is going to definitely move to the 22 nanometer technology, process technology that they talked about just a short time ago. So that's going to give them a big performance boost.
Yep.
Plus they're going to, it's going to be instead of 32 cores on the prototype, it's going to be over 50. So they're basically going to double the cores and have basically another 30-some percent increase because they're moving to a 22 nanometer technology. So they might have a very serious performance competitor to some of these GPUs. It'll be interesting to see what they actually come up with in the 2012 timeframe when it launches.
An important chip, an important architecture, and something that we'll keep watching. Let's take one more quick break, Michael, and come back and do one more interesting stat from this iteration of the Top 500.
Okay, very good.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by APRO International Incorporated, leading developers of innovative supercomputing solutions uniquely positioned to support high-performance computing markets. www.apro.com.
Well, Michael, here we are in 2011, and I was noticing that it's 25-year anniversary of not the official Top 500 necessarily, but the first time that our host here, Hans Moyer, first started co-assembling his lists of supercomputer installations. It's 25 years later, so it's kind of an important Top 500 list in that case. But one thing we were looking at is, obviously with Riken on top, we got a Japanese system there now, and it's made us all remember the Earth Simulator. You remember that one?
Yeah, it seems like ages ago, but that was just back in the 2002, 2004 time.
Dominated the top 500 list for several lists in a row.
For 2 years, yeah. It was at the top for 2 years.
I got a question for you. That Earth Simulator right now, if the original Earth Simulator came forward in time to today, where would it be on the top 500 list?
It actually wouldn't be on the list today because the bottom of the list is 40 teraflops, and that was a 35 teraflop system. So it is literally history.
Too bad, so sad, off the list.
Yeah.
But so just at the, and I think this is the first time it would have missed, right?
I think so. I think the bottom of the list moved up to 40. I think it was like 31 last time. So yeah, this would be it.
Which is remarable, actually, that it would have stayed on it for
that many
essentially
years.
A decade. But
right.
Now, as we move to a new Japanese number one, it's the first time that Earth Simulator would have not been one of the recognized top 500 most powerful computers.
It is amazing. Time moves fast, and in the HPC biz, it seems to move even faster. So, yeah.
Does it make you feel old, Michael?
No, I feel old for other reasons.
Okay,
thanks for asking.
Excellent. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go have a show. We'll see if we feel any older by the end of the week.
Okay. Well, until next time, do a wrap-up show in a couple days and talk about some of the winners and losers, what impressed us and what didn't.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Have a great show.
You too.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.